Welcome to the Parliamentary Podcast Series, Partnering for Global Impact, presented by the Parliamentary Network on the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. The podcast is brought to you in partnership with the Parliamentary Engagement Teams of the World Bank and IMF. Join us as we engage in discussions with leading development experts and parliamentarians from around the world. Together, we'll explore how we can take decisive action to achieve a world free of poverty on a livable planet. Now, let's jump right into today's episode, which comes directly from the 2025 Global Parliamentary Forum.
Please welcome our guest of honor, Mr. Mukhtar Diop. Thank you. How are you, Mukhtar? Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure and honor to have you with us this morning. So on behalf of the Parliamentary Network of the World Bank and the IMF, and in the name of all our members of Parliament who made all the way in traveling here to Washington, I want to welcome you and to thank you once again. So we are very impatient to hear you, Mukhtar, about how to catalyze the private investment, and maybe we will jump really rapidly. So we don't have so much time, and we're really happy to take as much as possible from your time and leave some time for this session of Q&A with our audience. So you have 10 minutes to present the 2030 strategy of IFC. So we will dive in directly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's okay. So thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So you are here at the IFC. I am Mukhtar Diop, the managing director, the head of IFC. IFC, as you know, the World Bank Group is made of three components. One is IBRD AIDA, AIDA looking at the lowest income country, IBRD looking at the middle income countries. You have IFC, which is a private sector branch of the World Bank Group. You have MIGA, who is a guarantee part of the World Bank Group. And you have ICSID, which is an entity which helps on conflict resolution between the sovereign and the private sector. So these are the components of the World Bank Group. I would like just to take a little bit of time to give you a little bit of history. After the war in the 40s, in 44, was created IBRD. The objective was post-war, how to rebuild the world. And at that time, people understood that it was mainly everybody speak English or French, what you want me to do? Okay. So the understanding was that the public sector will be helping rebuilding the world that was destroyed after the war. 10 years later, in 56, IFC was created because people understood that beyond reconstruction, we needed to have growth, we needed to fight poverty. And the institution called IFC was created, aiming at developing private sector activities and in enhancing the role in contributing to growth and to poverty reduction through the private sector interventions. 30 years later, MIGA was created because people realized that investment, private sector investment, were at risk and you needed to bring some guarantee, particularly the political risk guarantee. So that is a little bit of the history of the institutions, and I wanted to take you back in history to tell you a little bit how we have evolved over time. At the inception, IFC was conceived as bringing liquidity to companies, right? Which means we are lending to companies because they didn't have access to capital market, they didn't have access to resources. As we evolved and we saw that the need of the private sector, particularly for emerging countries, was increasing and that our own balance sheet was not sufficient to meet the huge needs that the private sector is facing in countries, we moved to becoming an institution, and that's what IFC 2030 is about, is to be an institution that uses its balance sheet to mobilize much more capital market. So the trillion that exists in institutional investors, in capital market, investment fund, be mobilized and be channeled to productive activities in developing countries. So to do that, we have been doing more of a few things. I just came this morning from the meeting of what's called the PSIL, which is a private sector investment lab that was put in place by our President Ajay Banga when he took the helm of the World Bank Group. And in that private sector investment lab, you have the main investors in the world, all the important pension fund, investment banking, and all those who are just are managing trillions of dollars in their balance sheet. And the objective of this PSIL was, what are the constraints for you to channel more of this money to developing countries? Why are you not putting more of this money in investment that are important for developing countries when we know that those countries have low level of savings and therefore cannot have investment at the level which is required to be able to have the growth that is needed? So I identified a few constraints. Number one was the uncertainty in the policy environment. Often there is measures which are taken, one step forward, two step backward, or sometimes policy measures are taken, but implementation is lacking. So that's a level of uncertainty that doesn't allow investors who are working in more advanced economy to put their resources in less developed countries. The second thing was that FX was often a problem for them. The fact that they were having, they could repatriate sometimes their profit that they were making in countries. They cannot convert their profit from local currency to dollars, and therefore for them it was difficult to invest in places where the capital movement, the movement of capital was constrained for macroeconomic reason. The third they were indicating is that they would like to have more guarantees to be able to help them with this uncertainty that you are facing in some of the countries. The fourth area was how you can help them to identify projects that themselves they will be financing because they don't have access, they don't know enough of this country, they don't know enough of this ecosystem. How can we help them generate projects that are meaningful, that have a significant rate of return so that they can mobilize this capital to go to those countries. So those were the kind of questions that are being discussed now in the private sector investment lab, and you have the most important private capital market managers in the world which are part of this. So I have seen this strategy is trying more and more to answer to those questions. And what we are trying to do today is to see how we could better utilize our balance sheet to mobilize more capital market. So what is the role and what is the importance for you, parliamentarian, and those who are setting the policies in your countries? So number one is uncertainty. I mean, the policies and the effectiveness of institutions is critical for investors to come in countries. If investors have a certain level of uncertainty, if the laws, if the rule of law is not existing in a country, is a huge deterrent for countries to be coming in, investors to come in countries. The second rule that you play and you are, which is very important for investors, is the effectiveness of institutions. Often institutions are designed in our country, and I have my colleague Norman here who is working a lot on that, which is business ready. You define institution, you say they should be functioning here, a regulator should be independent, but in reality, the regulator is not independent. So that the parliament can help in having discussion around the effectiveness of institution to make sure that those institutions are really serving their purpose, because often it's not the case. Third, as we are moving to that, in that area, we have been more and more expanding the scope of activities that we are doing, not only focusing on pure private sectors, but we are now doing more and more with SOEs and with subnationals. With subnationals, which are entities which are between the private and the public sector, and which needs a lot of investment because a lot of the responsibility are devoted to the subnational entities like water supply, like education, like basic infrastructure and so forth. So this is where we are currently in our journey. And just to give you an idea, IFC, between our own resources and resources that we'll be mobilizing, we will be doing more than $60 billion of investment throughout the world, spanning from investment in mining, in infrastructure, supporting banks to make a loan to SMEs and women-led companies. Name it, we are in a large number of sectors. In Africa, we are the largest investors of private sector investor in Africa. We will be mobilizing and investing close to $14 billion this year as we are ending our fiscal year in June. So this is a little bit what IFC is about and what IFC represents today. And I would be very happy to, Naila, to talk to answer any questions that might be useful for you, parliamentarian.
Thank you, Mokhtar, for this outstanding presentation. As a Moroccan, I can take this opportunity to say two things. Thank you for what IFC does in Morocco, because we have so many projects in Morocco in strategic sectors, public-private projects, and we are even working on very special sectors like the creative and cultural industries, trying to see how we can promote this sector. So it's a wide range of opportunities that we are trying to work on. And IFC is a very important partner, and our government in Morocco keeps telling us, as I represent the private sector in Parliament, in the Senate, I don't have any, I'm not affiliated to any political party, I represent companies, private sector entrepreneurs, and we always work a lot with IFC. So I really encourage everyone to look at what IFC does in our region, and I won't be long. I will immediately open the floor to the session of Q&A. I will repeat what I said earlier. Please introduce yourself, ask a short question, and I thank you for that. So I will start with Ghana and then Côte d'Ivoire, Sierra Leone and Nigeria. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Kojo Oponkrumah from Ghana. In your strategic plan for supporting private sector, you talk about supporting private sector capital mobilization. My question is two-pronged from Ghana and countries like Ghana. One, what sort of regulatory frameworks have worked best in other countries that assist you in mobilizing or assisting in that private sector capital mobilization? And two, Ghana is at a place where we're looking to onboard a lot of complementary funding for private equity and venture capital. Specifically, what can the IFC do in an area like this? Thank you.
Yeah, it was on this specifically on Ghana. Next month, we have the CEO forum in Abidjan. Your head of state will be there. And for us, in our strategy, we will be increasing significantly equity. We are investing in equity through funds or direct investment for equity. We believe that equity is a source of financing which is very much in demand for companies, because often they are over-leveraged, they go to the banking sector, they have debt, but they don't have enough capital, and therefore the leverage is not the appropriate one. So in our current strategy, we intend to double the amount of equities that we will be having in the economy, and therefore we can see the effect that we have in mobilizing more of debt and so forth. So this is the kind of thing that we would like to do. Secondly, we would like also to be able to go in areas which are very expensive for the government to finance, but which are today not attracting enough investment. For instance, in terms of policy regulation, today you see that often in the energy sector, you have generation, transport, and distribution. The generation now in Ghana, for instance, is very much into the end of the private sector with the IPPs. But the transport is still largely in the government hand. And the transport is very expensive, the transmission lines. So we would like now countries to take measures so that they accept to unbundle it and allow, extract this asset from the balance sheet of the SOEs and make it available to private sector to invest in it and build those assets, own them, and be paid for the transport of electrons along the line. So these kind of things that we would like to do. It requires work. It requires that the off-taker, which is a distribution company, be much, much better managed. And we have a problem in the African continent with the management of the distribution companies in general. And I think that will be an important thing that we need to work on to do that. So I also some other investment like in the water sector, like desalination, like sanitation, and so forth, which are important and which are expensive, and which require a PPP approach to be able to be sustained and to scale it. Now, what we are doing more and more is instead, in the past, countries were relying often on grant money, which is provided and say, let me take this grant money to find part of my needs. What we are suggesting now is that why don't you take this grant money to lower the cost of capital that you will receive from the market so that you can reach a much more, much larger number of people and much investment of a larger scale. So if you take investment from the private capital at the market price and you use your grant money to lower the cost, to buy down the cost of this capital, you can scale up at a much faster pace. That's the kind of thing that we are doing.
Thank you, Maktar. Côte d'Ivoire?
Merci, je suis le...
Thank you very much. I'm the senator from Côte d'Ivoire, and I heard that you have identified the role of parliamentaries in your mission, specifically considering uncertainty and the efficiency of the institutions. I would like you to specify, how do you identify the productive sector for the emerging countries? Do you support or do you give a role to the parliamentarians? I think that this is relatively important, but if you do not have responders locally, it's going to be difficult. There are a lot of countries to manage. Do you rely on these members? How do you proceed? I'm going to respond in French. When we go into a country, we try to accomplish three things. For example, I'm presiding for 3 to 4 years at the IFC, and the objective is to double, to go from 32 billion and go up to 63 billion. How do we accomplish this? We have initiatives with local champions. Coming from the continent, I am absolutely aware that Africa needs a specific support by joint venture, by collaboration with private investors, or to be able to invest in productivity. And what can we do? I think what can the parliament do? These investors will indicate that there are opportunities, and we are interested in supporting you. What can the MPs do? They can try to contribute to the development of the national investment. When we talk about the ABVM, there are very few companies that are on the stock exchange for West Africa. If we look at the four or five most important companies, they represent 75% to 80% of the capital on the stock exchange. When we say that the Africans invest their money in foreign settings, I don't think it's something specific to the Africans. I think that when there are interesting opportunities for the private sector, for the middle income class, there are opportunities to invest. So when we are on this market, this is a valuable asset. We will have more national companies that are going to start to float action assets on the market. How do we accomplish this? We need good governance. If there's not good governance, we cannot have this presence on the real estate market. We will help mobilize at the national level, and this will help the middle income class of our countries and will enable us to create
and avoid the leakage of this capital, that it represents a source of problems. This is the way I define the role. Thirdly, in typical parliament, there are always sectorial commissions, agriculture. If I remember at the time when I was in the government, this is the way it worked in my country. And I think these sectorial commissions are an important source of dialogue and information. And we are absolutely ready to work on the ground, and as is the World Bank, to talk about with these different committees and how we can collaborate, whether it's with the Senate or the National Assembly. Thank you very much, Mukhtar. And we are going, it is true, we relayed the message to the President of the World Bank to be able to encourage the meetings between the members of Parliament and the representatives of the World Bank in the countries to which we belong.
Thank you. Having listened to Mr. Diop, I think it gives hope to members of parliament, but it also creates doubts in our minds. Let me give you an example. In Sierra Leone, quite recently, I think like 2 weeks ago, the IFC granted a facility to a certain PC Agriculture, a sub-component of PC Holdings, about $12 million. Our first concern as members of parliament is that the intention of the IFC is to create capital retention within the country. But if you grant facilities to private sector for which you have not done a thorough assessment and you've given $12 million to be invested in the production of onions, firstly, the investment in question is the biggest importer of onions. So how would you ensure, and what role will parliament have clearly to understand what quantum of the money is used in the importation of onions and what quantum would actually be invested in the country in terms of meeting the food self-sufficiency objective for which the loan was granted?
Thank you.
Yeah. I think that I want to restate a little bit the difference between the loan that I work for the World Bank, IBRD. I was vice president for Africa for 6 years. This is a different discussion because this is public money that you lend to the government. And obviously, the parliament has an oversight on the resources that are made available to the government. When you lend to a private sector entity, the person is borrowing the money that a person has to pay back. So I don't think that we can impose on that person a parliamentarian oversight on the way Naila wants to spend her money in Morocco. That's her money, okay? So she has a right to spend it the way she wants and the way. Now, that being said, the point you are making is important. We have developed what we call the anticipated impact assessment, AIMS. When we are preparing a project, we look at the anticipated developmental impact of that project. And now that's an important element feature that we have is quite unique to IFC compared to other commercial bank, because a commercial bank is not looking at the developmental impact. Us, we look at it. And in looking at it, we look at what is this project bringing in terms of job creation, in terms of improving the consumer welfare, et cetera, or the impact it can have in the balance of payment of a country. In this particular case, we did it for the production of onion. So I don't have the detail of how it's monitored. But our investment officers, when they prepare the project, they are defining the component of for which the loan is made. It's made to increase the production of onion in Sierra Leone. In Sierra Leone, and actually, that project came to my attention at some point. I don't know for which reason. People mentioned to me that there were a project being developed which will be helping in increasing the production of onion and therefore reduce the importation of onion over time. So I don't know the execution of it, how is it in details, I cannot answer to it because you know we have thousands of projects, but that's what was the objective and the reason why IFC decided to invest in this company.
Thank you. The next question, I have Nigeria, and then Algeria, and then the last one will be for Uganda, because we have a time frame.
Cameroon.
I'm sorry, we won't be able to take
maybe more. Let's
okay,
take Cameroon.
If you give us more time, we're ready to take your time.
Can I take, will it be okay if I take Cameroon?
And the last one then will be Cameroon. Just ask your questions as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My name is Mohamed Sani Musa. I chair the Finance Committee, Nigerian Senate. While IFC and MIGA have played critical roles in supporting private sector development in emerging economies, we in Africa, many of the countries find it very difficult because of the stringent terms and conditions that usually come with this, with assessing this funding. We believe that it will be necessary, we as parliamentarians, to really understand where and how these terms and conditions are placed on fundings for such emerging economy. In developing nations today, if
your question, please, we have to go straight to the question, I'm sorry.
If you're talking about bringing out people and businesses, funding is very important. So from the activities of IFC, especially in Nigeria, and the meager support they were given to power sector, of which I'm very sure you are aware of it, the Azure Power, where there has been issues, and Nigeria tried to get out of those that agreement, and it has become very difficult to the fact that we have to remain, and every month, large sum of money.
Your question, please. A question.
So what? I'm going to understand.
We don't have much time, and we have 1 minute left.
Okay. The question is that how can we make those terms and conditions to go with each of the diverse countries' condition? I mean, if you put your condition and it's universal, emerging economies like ours in Africa will find it very difficult assessing. And by the time we assess, how do we also go ahead to go along your own terms and conditions so that our businesses can take up?
Thank you.
I want to be straight on that, because I'm an African, okay? So I don't talk about Africa in general. I talk about it very specifically. It happens that in my career, I spent a big chunk of my life on the other side, okay? At the table, including the Minister of Economy and Finance in my own country, and being Vice President for Africa for six years here. So I know a little bit of the reality I'm talking about. It's not correct to say that the conditions of IFC are not worse than the condition of the banks in Nigeria. When we finance the private sector, actually, we have been financing largely. I was in Abuja and Lagos, when was it? In May. We are funding largely Access Bank. We are funding BUA. We are funding Alico. We are funding, the list is long of companies that we are financing in Nigeria. So we are financing largely. I don't have the top of my mind the size of our portfolio in Nigeria. We have a very large and sizable portfolio. And actually we do more. I'm going to the CAO forum in Abidjan. We sign more projects. What I want to do is more agriculture in Nigeria. We have been pushing. So I think that it's a bit general statement that you are making, my friend, okay? Is the conditions that we are financing companies on the ground today. I finance a company when I was last time in Nigeria, we are financing it. Now, what I need your help with is the airport, okay? This is the parliamentarians, we are holding the decisions. Why are we not privatizing the airport? Why are we not bringing more capital in the airport? We are ready today to bring a lot of resources. When I was last time in India, I discussed about the Lagos airport, I talked about Abuja airport. So I need you, parliamentarian, to say the airports in Nigeria need to improve and we can bring the private sector and concession. And we will be coming with. So what I'm trying to say by here is you know, let's look at the issue and say, what are the concrete issues that we can solve
Please, can you remain quiet, please?
Because I cannot hear myself. Let's look at the problems that we want to solve together and be very pragmatic about it, okay? Because I think that if I'm not pragmatic about it, we can go to very lengthy conversation about the nature of the international order. Is it fair? Is it not fair? That is conversation that we can have a lot around pepe soup or chebujen, okay? But that's not solving the problem of our people. Let's go and take a specific case. And now, I have three, four things that I would like you parliamentarians in Nigeria to help me. How can we bring more money for infrastructure? When I was there, we were talking about the corridor between Nigeria and Benin. Why are we not building a big highway there, toll road, which allow and improve the logistics and the African Free Trade Agreement? I need your help to come to go to Parliament, say, okay, we will be concessioning a big highway road to be able to move goods from Nigeria to Benin faster than it is now, and remove all the bottleneck that we have on the road. That's why. Secondly, let's see and have the condition to open for investing in a new airport. These are concrete things that if we work together, we are happy to do this. My team on Nigeria is here. If you want, we can have a session immediately this week with our team and you discuss that.
Thank you, Maktar. This is a very straight answer. This is what we want. We want this kind of conversation. So we will have the possibility to take two questions. I'm sorry. We have Algeria and Uganda. We have a time frame we have to fit in. I'm sorry. So please, Algeria and Uganda, ask your questions very shortly. Thank you.
Well, Kenya, I can. This is my second country, so you guys will have.
You're the master of time.
You will have a bad treatment because you are my second country. So I will pass you.
Okay, so Algeria, please, can you ask the question? Thank you.
Yes, good morning, everyone. May I ask my question in Arabic, please? So please put on your headsets.
Please, can you listen to the question? Thank you.
We can't hear, unfortunately. Thank you so much.
السيد النائب المحترم غير باش ما تطولش بزاف في السؤال الله يخليك
Please, لان ما عندوش الوقت بزاف as brief as possible. It was quite an honor today to learn a lot about the goals and the nature of the work of the IFC. It's such noble targets because they work on curbing poverty and encourage the environment of investment. It's really such noble goals. And since you are available on the ground over 100 countries, and would it be possible to give us a live example of one country or two countries that benefited from the funding of the IFC and where you fully succeeded in dealing with the poverty and terminated poverty in this country? Would you share with us, using WhatsApp, some statistics about the funding of countries that received loans? And here I'm talking about numbers and figures, so probably we could use them in our administrative goals.
Alors, la première question est très bien, donc je pense que...
I can give you our annual report last year, and we update of our reports of our lending. You have all the numbers that we have. Vous donnez tous les chiffres dont qu'on a cette année.
Regarding the numbers that we have for last year, we have a report that is available. Are you a member of parliament from Algeria? I will need your help as such. I need your help because Algeria is an important market. We are talking to certain investors in the Gulf who are working with you on the question of agriculture, and we are trying to see how we can work more with the Algerian company. So if you could help us introduce ourselves to more Algerian companies, it would be, we are takers. I have my advisor, Edouane, he is Algerian. I have my advisor who is going to come and see you, and you can help us, you can help introduce us to Algerian companies, and we would be very interested in working with them. Thank you. Uganda?
In Uganda, we have Bujagali Power Hydropower, which is being funded, which was initially funded by IFC. This agreement was signed in 2006. And the purpose was to produce 250 megawatts. And the agreement says government of Uganda will pay for all the power, whether it's consumed or not. In 2017, was supposed to be the end of the agreement. IFC extended another loan because it discovered this was one of the easiest ways where people were trying to get money free. There was a return on investment of 19%. And at the same time, they're having dividends paid on the excess. Now, the question is, has IFC ever looked at the formula they gave Uganda in 2006? And two, have they also looked at how the turnover of shareholders, because every almost 2 years, there's a turnover of shareholders in that project because there's free money. In fact, recently, Total International has come to invest. And the power cost is on increase every year in. And IFC has even written a letter to government of Uganda to exempt them from income tax.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, I haven't heard everything. You're talking about Bujagali. Okay. Bujagali was an investment that was made at that time. And as you know, there were a lot of questions around Bujagali, which is not only related to IFC, as you remember. I was living in my dear country, in my dear second country, Kenya, when the conversation was being held there. And the structuring of it, there are some commitments that needed to be made at that time, which were not fulfilled as they were supposed to be fulfilled, if you remember. I'm happy to have that conversation, but Bujagali by itself is a conversation which is a bit long to have in this setting. But what I saw is that there is more investment that needs to be done in Uganda, particularly in the agriculture sector. Particularly in the agriculture sector. Okay? Sorry?
Okay.
One we're aware, but yeah. We're interested in the power sector, which is very costly to the country.
I couldn't hear.
No, he can't hear you very well. Anyway, I have signs saying that we have to end our session because Mr. Diop has other obligations and we have another session. We will have just one last question because Maktar requested it from Kenya. Please make a short question. We have a big delegation from Kenya. Please remain seated. It's our last question before we wrap up. So a rapid, quick question, please.
Thank you. Having lived in Kenya, ought to be the reason why you should be more facilitative of more financing for PPPs in Kenya, and it's working on very well. But now that Kenya is a democracy where parliamentarians do oversight and legislation, and that is why our main role as parliamentarians here, what is for us after this event in involvement of these PPPs arrangements in our countries so that we don't only see them on books, that we can also be involved in the initial stages when they are being formulated so that we can be in the picture? Because we have been told that one of the...
Your question, please. We have to go straight to the question.
To advocate for better business environment. How do we do that if we are not involved from the initial stages as parliamentarians?
No, I would be very happy to make sure that in the discussion on the law and implementation of the PPP framework, usually the law is going to parliament before being approved. the PPP law. So I think this is a good opportunity when the law is presented to you and before it's is voted to have all the engagements that you want to have with our team. Actually, our hub, we have three hubs three large hubs in Africa, South Africa, Kenya, and now Dakar are the three large hubs, and the other office is a bit smaller. And the vice president for Africa is moving to Nairobi. We are in a process of decentralization of our vice president, and the vice president for Africa will be based in Nairobi in the coming month. So it will be an opportunity to engage with, not with him, because we have director who is there, Marie Poshka, and I'm sure that the team and the PPP team will be happy to do that. Actually, you might be quite things. Our PPP teams is led by a lot of Africans, okay? You have Nigerians manager, you have director Zimbabwe, you have VP who is from Uganda. So you have opportunity, as they're sitting here, to be able to organize a conversation with them on the PPP framework, and anything that you need to know about the PPPs, I will be happy to do that. So take that opportunity that while you are here to start establishing contact, and my team here, we try to fight.
Thank you. We're sorry we don't have time for another question. We will take a family photo, everyone, with Mr. Diop, and we thank him for taking so much time with us and for being with us. It was not in the beginning planned in our program. So please join us here so we can make a
thank you so
family
much.
Photo. Thank you, Mukhtar. Thank you
thank
so
you.
Much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.